Welcome to the Valley Outdoors Show, and we're glad to have you guys with us today. We have got Don in the house. Don, are you there?
I'm here.
And we got Ava.
I'm here, too.
And I am not there, but I am there in spirit, and we are going to have a good show today, guys. We've got a story of 250,000 steelhead that have escaped from a fish hatchery. We'll hear the latest on how they broke out of that hatchery. And we're also going to have a story on what the world's best cooking advice. Oh, wait a minute. Sorry, that's worst wild game cooking advice. Stay tuned for those stories and more when we return.
For the angler that has everything, or just thinks everything, grace your palm with the feel of a custom fishing rod made to your specs from Patriot Custom Rods. It will soon become a cherished tool in your hand, providing the sensitivity and feel you have long dreamed of. Patriot Custom Rods are specially designed to your species of fishing, rod weight, colors, grip type, and length. Treat yourself or someone else to a Patriot Custom Rod. Find us on thevalleyoutdoors.com.
Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors Radio Show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together, we can make a difference.
Welcome, Donald, Eva. How are you guys doing?
Well, we're doing great.
How are you doing?
Good. Well, you know, a little better. Got a little head cold thing going on. Figure I'd just hang out and not be with you guys, so.
Yeah. Just out of precaution, that's probably not a bad idea. You sound fine, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and you're in good spirits, so.
You mean I sound the same as I always do?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
That's about the way that goes, right?
Right.
Exactly. But, you know, have you guys been following the Olympics at all?
Yeah.
Well,
as much as I can. It's kind of tough, but.
I follow two sports fairly close. And that's pretty much it.
And Don, what would those two sports be?
Hmm.
Well, they would be, of course, curling and and hockey. So the hockey is just getting rolling now with the women. I don't believe, have lost a game at this point yet, or have the men.
You know, hockey's like the one that I don't watch.
Yeah. The men, the last game that I saw, men played China and they won like 8-0. So, and you know what's interesting is it's a different type of team that they have now than they did in the past, where they actually had NHL players. Most all the team participants are active college players, and the majority of them are from Michigan and Minnesota. And Minnesota actually has there's members from St. Cloud, Minnesota, and there's members from the University of Minnesota, and actually Mankato as well, Mankato State University. So,
lots of people involved in the sport for sure.
Yep, and curling, you know, that's I don't know if you've. It's honestly, I had to kind of learn the game myself. They're playing the mixed doubles, and that's a different game, and it's actually very. Short compared to the regular game where you've got eight people on the ice. There's only two on each team, a man and a woman, and they only throw five stones, and the scoring gets crazy. I mean, it's crazy. The U.S. Team didn't make the medal round.
No,
so.
I watched that.
They ran into just some tough luck and missed a few shots, and boy, at that level, you just can't do that. On the other hand, the women's team has been playing unbelievable.
Yeah,
and I think there's another game coming up here real shortly for the men. So I think the men have won one and lost one, and it usually comes down to the last rock.
Well, so. And you know the early on in the men's side of it, they took a loss to on Thursday. They took a loss to the Swedish team.
Right.
So that was a tough loss, and so you hate to see that, but of course, you know, there's a lot of things going on. We're not going to clue everybody into every single thing that's gone on, but that was, you know, kind of a unique thing. For me, obviously, you know my following within the skiing side, and very surprising was in the men's downhill, Cochran, man from U.S., his mother was an Olympic champion, gold medal skier, and he took the silver, which was totally unexpected, an incredible way to come back. I mean, if you ever watch the downhill, I mean, it's all hang on. We're just going for every possible second, you know, trying to cut things out. And the number of guys that ended up skiing out of the course because of the dips and the pockets and the different knolls within that course, it was just incredible. And so from that standpoint, watching that man's downhill and having that happen for a gentleman that's been at that World Cup level for so long and just knocking at the door, not able to come out, but Cochran really did an amazing job. So that was in my mind was really cool. And of course, the big disappointment, you know, from a coaching standpoint, having coached junior Olympic athletes, from my standpoint, watching Michaela Schifrin, was a pretty devastating from my side of it. Knowing how good she is in pressure situations, but also, you know, looking at that, both events and she crashed happened early on in the race or in the actual course for her, and both situations were an error in mental lapse in what she was doing, and unfortunately they both involved an inside ski and she booted out, meaning her inside boot had contacted the ground and forced both skis to go out from underneath her, which is something that she just does not do. So lots to come yet. Obviously, she's going to be looking for a Super G coming up soon. That'll be happening. I think it may have already happened. I have to double check. I haven't looked at the results as of yet.
You know, Eric, one of the highlights, I think, of the Olympics so far is Jesse Diggins has again made history for the U.S. Cross-country team, having won her first individual medal. First time we've ever had a U.S. Cross-country skier win a medal. On an individual race,
yeah, that was fantastic.
Yep. She got the bronze.
She was overcome with emotion. It was fun to watch her, knowing we had her on and Skype with her before the previous Olympics in Pyeongchang.
Right.
And, you know, when you have that kind of a link, it's really kind of cool to see somebody go from hoping they can do okay at the Olympics and making the team to now being the, what I get, the
one of
the senior member, or
yeah,
not necessarily senior member, but the heir apparent to really take over in the cross-country side of it. And she has the potential to really be a powerhouse across all elements within the cross-country world.
Right.
So that's just, it's so cool to watch and you know, keep after it. You know, if you guys are out there watching, stay with it. You know, it's well worth it. Again, this only happens once every 4 years, and there's a lot of things out there that are history making that you just don't get to see but once. And yeah, you can see in a replay, but to see it happen right away is pretty incredible. And one of those things. And of course, obviously the sports we're talking about. The other one I liked, Don, I don't know if you saw it, but the skiathlon.
No, I didn't see that one. No.
They've got a ski and they shoot all at the same time. You know, we should do that sometime. Let's go ski 20 miles and then
try to hold the target. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Well, tell you what, we're going to be right back with more Valley Outdoors right after this. Hang tight. Welcome back, everybody. And of course, we'd like to have you guys check us out on thevalleyoutdoors.com. And Don, where else?
Also on Facebook.
Of course.
Yep.
Kind of a fun
Please
place
friend
to
us.
Go check. Yeah, kind of a fun place to check things out. And lots to talk about there as well. So kind of cool. Very cool, in fact. So, Don, you've looked at the rundown sheet for today, right? That's kind of the sheet that we use to kind of go by what I said as an outline for the show, right?
Right.
Okay. When you saw this next story, what did you think?
Well, I mean, it's how do they count them?
So here's the story, and I highlighted it at the top of the show. Nearly 250,000 fish escaped from a Washington fish hatchery. All I can see is these fish in a red jumpsuit jumping over a wall and taking off running. That's all I can picture.
All right. So what happened?
249,770 young steelhead went missing from the Lions Ferry hatchery near Snake River Basin. Interesting. Officials in the state believe that the incident was a result of equipment failure as opposed to human error. The Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife announced that the missing young steelhead went from, obviously were missing from the hatchery near the Snake River Basin. They believe the fish escaped into the river, and it's unknown how many, if any, survived, which is the unfortunate part. The hatchery typically releases about 60,000 steelhead into the river, although this normally doesn't occur during the fall or winter. While the missing fish were only just noticed, it's unclear whether they actually escaped. Depending on the time period of the escape, it's likely that many of the young fish would have fallen prey to predators. It is possible that the fish survived, however, which would lead to an increased population of steelhead fish in the Snake River. An investigation is underway, but it's reported that the fish escaped due to a rubber gasket failure that created an inch and a half opening, which was big enough for some of the fish to swim through, and estimated that over 60% of the fish at the hatchery escaped. The hatchery transported the remaining 135,000 fish to Cottonwood Acclimation Pond near the Oregon border, so they kind of do a halfway house kind of thing. And then the remaining fish will be released into the Grand Ronde River in April.
So most of these were fingerlings or less?
Yep, they got to be roughly that size, yeah.
Okay.
They're slightly bigger, but yeah, they're in that avenue as far as size goes.
Well, somebody's getting a lot of free meals. The fish,
no
I'm
joke.
Talking about, yeah. I mean, eventually the fishing ought to be improved there, though. You would think.
Well, one would think, right?
Right.
So, yeah, in my opinion, that whole thing there is a bit of a debacle. Would that be the best way to put it?
It's unfortunate.
Yeah, I would say.
I mean, I'm sure it messes up their management plans and all of that. It probably happens all over the place. They really don't know about it, but.
Yeah, I would say that's definitely the case. And you know, the funny part about that is when you have. Well, have you seen a video where they actually shoot salmon? They have a bypass?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Is that not the, I mean, okay, I'm thinking, well, that would be an awesome way to do it. But, of course, these fish didn't need to get shot. They just took off on their own.
You're talking a water cannon type thing.
Yeah, well, they shoot through a tube.
Yep.
And they shoot them into the
That's
the
more
tube
like a vacuum.
Under the, yeah,
it's a clear, it's a clear tube. You can see them going through it.
Yeah, pretty cool deal. But, yeah. Except these didn't need a vacuum or a push. They just took it on their own to go take off and run down the chute. So, but I would say you start for looking for some good fishing going on in the Snake River.
All right.
Interesting. I thought it was rather funny. Okay. Moving right along. Western states are now open. They're to new efforts in delisting the grizzly bear from protection. Another chapter in the saga to remove grizzly bears from the Endangered Species Act is underway in Montana, Idaho, and Wyoming. Currently, several efforts to delist the two grizzly bear population segments that some experts believe are healthy enough to be considered recovered. The Greater Yellowstone and the Northern Continental Divide ecosystems in Wyoming, Montana, and Idaho have recently created a memorandum of agreement to help delist the GYE, that's a Greater Yellowstone grizzly bear population. And in December, this last December, the governor of Montana announced that he is petitioning U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to remove the population from the ESA, or the delisting it.
And from the endangered list?
Yep, endangered list, Endangered Species Act, that's ESA.
Yep.
And they're going to go further east into Montana and looking to make that change. And, of course, the population is estimated over 1,100 bears and is well above management goals. However, opponents of the delisting say those estimates are high and the population goals for removal from the list are much too low for a sustainable population. Some animal rights activists and groups say the threshold should be bumped to 2,000 bears, a number many biologists feel is beyond the carrying capacity of the ecosystem. Now, I will tell you what, Don, I don't know if you have a lot of friends that have gone out west in the last 3 years hunting elk or mule deer or whatever in that, you know, in the mountainous areas of Montana or Idaho.
Right.
But I will say, when you go out in a guided trip right now, it is flat out the number one thing that's said, you need a minimum of 2 canisters of bear spray, the large spray, as well as sidearms, and they go through methodology and what you need to do in a grizzly situation. And there has not been one report from my friends that have been out there that has not had a grizzly encounter, whether it was firsthand or aftermath of a grizzly situation. And they have not seen anything like that. And probably, and a lot of guys have been out there for 20 years that they've seen that. So, I don't know. It from what I'm seeing from experience from everybody that I know that have been out there, and of course from the numbers that they think are sustainable within the depending on what you call it, National Resources Department of, or in this case, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, I think they have a pretty good handle on the maximum allowed, or the maximum that can sustain in a certain population area. And if they get to a certain point, then you have to worry about them going into other areas and really creating some issues. With that, we are going to be right back with more stories right after this.
Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors radio show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together we can make a difference.
Welcome back, you guys. And Don, you do a fair amount of cooking outdoors, right? I mean, wild game.
Oh, well, yeah, I do as much as I can. I love to cook.
So what's your favorite food?
My favorite food? Well, I like to smoke.
Wild game.
Oh, wild game. I don't know. Probably pheasant or venison.
Okay. Well, I think this next story is going to be right up your alley. I think I know, you know, Ava likes it too. Only the part she keeps forgetting is that deer sticks are part of
the deer.
The venison sticks are part of the enjoyment after the kill. So we'll include that in it, right, Ava?
Yeah.
So the story goes, from soaking venison in diet soda to letting birds hang until their heads separate from their bodies, there's a lot of bad advice floating around when it comes to cooking wild game. Doing a search of the best way to cook whatever, and you're less than 5 clicks away from instructions to soak the meat in vinegar, or the cliche throw it away and eat the cedar plank joke. We all know about that, and the same thing holds true with lutefisk. If you've ever had lutefisk before, Don, Ava, you ever had that before?
No.
Okay, I have. Good. I have not. I've seen it, and that was enough to make me not want to try it. There's very few foods I don't like, by the way.
Yeah, in this case, and there's a lot of things you can do to screw it up, I will say that, which is sad. So ruining the meat after the kill is one of those things. Some guy told, and this is from Steve, actually, Ranella from Meat Eaters. Some guy back home once told me you can scald turtles when you cook turtle. Scald them in hot water like you're plucking a chicken. He said the skin will slip right off like a banana peel. He learned quickly that the ill-informed game handling advice that day, and unfortunately it failed miserably and it ruined the whole turtle. So sad part about it, it became tough as rubber and as a truck tire, and it welded itself to the meat even more ferociously than normal. He said worse than that was a strange smell that partially boiled turtle skin gives off.
That's scalding birds and pigs. That's enough to make me not want to eat turtle.
Yeah, scalding birds and pigs to remove feathers and hairs is a common practice because it works. The problem is you aren't removing feathers or hair from the snapping turtle. Yeah, no kidding. So those kinds of things obviously are not to follow. One of the guys from a game farm, he's processed thousands of deer at a butchering facility. He says many hunters take great care of the harvest to ensure the best possible condition. Others have never been educated correctly and are flat out lazy or are faced with time restraints that don't allow them to properly harvest and care for the particular the deer that they're getting. So one of the things that really is important here is the manner in which you treat the deer after the harvest obviously is a big thing. I know, Don, you've been deer hunting before, haven't you?
Yes.
And Ava, obviously you do. And hunters claim they got the meat cooled down right away, of course, which is important, but then they found something very different. People have brought us some meat that's been rotting over the years, and they stuffed 80 pounds of hot venison in the cooler over a bag of ice, and they're surprised that it's spoiled over the weekend. Yeah. How long do you guys hang deer from your rafters when you get back, right?
Well, yeah, usually you hang them for at least a day. I think they hang for up to 3 days sometimes.
Or
I think
exactly.
Depending on temperature is a big thing, so you want to make sure it cools down. So you get them cleaned out, washed out, and keep the hair off the meat. And
right. And one of the things they said is if you pack all the meat together, it increases the thermal mass and it doesn't allow efficient transfer of the heat. So the meat will basically spoil itself because it heats up within the meat. So big time there, big problem. And don't simply throw it in a cooler with ice. Other advice, there's some extreme pieces and parts. One conversation he had with a client in Mexico, he told me his ranch manager insisted that large boars be brought back quickly, within 20 minutes, in order for them to be processed in a manner that would render them edible. His technique, I'm going to put it delicately, this is how the story goes, we'll skip that. It involved removing pieces and parts of the anatomy and therefore relaxing the carcass, and he's not making it up. It actually was an unfortunate story. And but rather than the ranch manager, he said this is probably the most outrageous story he's ever heard. And when you deal with something like that, of course, boar, as we all know. Have you ever had wild boar, Don?
I have not, but I just watched a show where a gentleman shot two of them, and then he showed how he cleaned them and everything else, and then smoked them. And I was more interested in knowing, you know, the process for how they smoked them. But they did them, and he actually smoked them in quarters. They looked amazing when they were done, and he had plenty of people lined up there to take them home.
Well, and speaking of which, one of the techniques that somebody said, here's another story for you, and find a big can of fruit cocktail, the really big one, get two of them. You breast out a goose, you soak the breasts in the fruit cocktail for a week or two, and then you grill them. The best way to cook the geese there is. And, this gentleman said it struck me strange and oddly specific. And there's legitimate benefits, obviously, to brining meat. We all know that. But using fruit-flavored sugar water is not accomplishing anything other than making the meat taste like corn syrup. If you want the meat to taste like canned fruit cocktail, maybe you should just eat fruit cocktail and leave the animal alone. But, you know, Don, really what it comes down to is this. Others, say soaking it in milk to hide the game flavors. These things are really not what it comes down to in cooking. And one of the things they really... my advice would be, and I know, Ava, you're a big fan of it, but really tuning into the meat eaters and looking what these guys can provide as far as information that can help you have a much better cooking experience and really a better overall taste. And you'll have family that won't eat meat because you made something bad, and they'll say, I'll never eat that again because it tasted like garbage.
Oh, I do that to myself. I don't have to have somebody else do that. You know, I will say that one of my favorite wild game is, and most people wouldn't agree with me, is goose breast. And
it can be, yeah.
And I have the simplest recipe, and it's simply put it in a roaster, wrap it in bacon, cover it with raisins and put it in the oven for 5 hours at 225, and you'll be amazed at how
fantastic.
Good that breast is. Yep.
You know, Don, I want to get this story in because it's a really kind of a cool story. It has to do with in Michigan. The successful fall fish stocking this last fall is definitely adding to angling opportunities. In 8 different species, there were 672,000 fish weighing nearly in 13.5 tons. Those are totals from the Michigan DNR fall 2021 stocking effort. And they were at 123 locations across the state. Another outstanding fall fishing stocking season that will be providing enhanced opportunities throughout Michigan, as the DNR fish production manager said. I mean, that's a crazy number. That's amazing. I mean, literally amazing.
Yep.
18.2 million fish put into Michigan waters for 2021. And what a great resource. And, of course, the state, I mean, the steelhead angling across the state of Michigan is nothing less than, it's second to none. Incredible out there. And if you ever take a trip, if you're a local, take a trip to Michigan. If you're in Michigan, obviously, enjoy what you have, because that is just an amazing fishery across the state. And they've done a fantastic job. The Marquette State Fish Hatchery near Marquette stocks 38,000 fall fingerlings and adult brook trout and lake trout that weighed a combined 8,000 pounds when these fish were stocked at 46 locations in the upper and lower peninsula. And again, across the state, there's other places near Petoskey, the same thing with Wild Rose Brown Trout and Platte River State Fish Hatchery as well. So across the state, big success stories, and we love the fact that they're really going after that. So what else do we love? We love the fact that you guys are joining us. So you guys stay tuned for next week's show. I don't know what's going to be on it, but I know it's going to be good. For Don, Ava, and myself, we are the Valley Outdoors. Thanks for joining us.